Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I'm excited to welcome to this show intuitive coach and influential speaker Gigi Young. Now, Gigi is making quite an impact with her unique coaching method called Sovereign Spirituality that asks the individual to take a role and responsibility for their own personal journey into empowerment. Now, Gigi takes a bold stance on the ET alien question by suggesting that galactic consciousness is real and something that is available to humanity if we're willing to raise our awareness. Is there a program in place to keep us from seeing a higher vision of reality? Let's go ask Gigi Young.
Pleiadians are real. They have been interacting with us for a very long time, and a lot of people have that DNA.
The Dark Journalist Special Report. ET, Galactic Consciousness, and Sovereign Spirituality. An in-depth two-part interview with intuitive coach Gigi Young. Now, let's go join Dark Journalist Daniel List.
Gigi, it's great to have you on with us.
I'm so glad to be on. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, I've watched a lot of your videos and I've listened to a lot of your work. And I want to say right off the bat that I think what you're doing with your spiritual sovereignty approach is very unique. You know, it seems to me to be about taking responsibility for your own spiritual growth and really getting out of that pattern of relying too much on a group or a leader. Now, we have a lot to cover here, including your deep research into the ET phenomena. But let's start with sovereign spirituality. What is it exactly?
Yeah, I think as humans, I think that we have this urge to give our power away and to project our actual higher self onto somebody else. And we've been doing that for millennia.
Oh, yeah.
And sovereign spirituality is the idea that it's all within you. And you can have any information that you want. You can connect with, you know, spirit guides, beings. You can connect with your higher mind, which is actually how we're designed to function, is, you know, we're not meant to like cram everything in our mind and then maybe remember it. We're actually designed to tap into a universal mind. So sovereign spirituality is your full potential as a human. And I really believe that we're going in that direction. We need to release these savior paradigms that we seem to hold so dear that actually completely disempower us and keep us from getting to that next level of consciousness, which will also lead into a better society. So that's kind of what I believe sovereign spirituality to be.
That's very interesting on this idea of giving our power away. Now, certainly, like you said, it's a natural tendency on our part. But do you think it's also programmed into us?
I think, yeah, I think it's been programmed in. But I also think that there's a little bit of a predisposition for it because of the era that we've been in on the planet. And I think that consciousness changes shape. And consciousness changes form. But I also believe that there are certain forces that want to exploit certain shadow elements of our personalities, of our beings, for energy or for whatever. So I think that it's both. I think that it's representative of a phase that we were in, but also, you know, kind of something that's an agenda that's been created to keep people down.
Now, that's a great point, and you've actually taken a good look at different spiritual communities and also at the alternative research community in general, because you're so deep in there yourself. So, you know, between the commercialism on one side and the harvesting that goes on, how, and I want to find just the right word here, how infiltrated do you think it is?
I feel like if you can keep someone from connecting with their spirit, you can really, really control them, period. That is the reality. And I think that the spiritual community is infiltrated by certain individuals or certain agendas that would like to control spirituality, because when you do that, obviously you control the person. But I also think that there's also just people that are not well.
Right.
And people that are just shady, that want energy, that want attention. And I also think the New Age community is a perfect place. It has all these kind of dark folds and it can't really be regulated. So I also think it just attracts people that fall into the agenda without even meaning to. So I think it's sort of both again.
Absolutely. That's an excellent description. And it begs the question, how can you have accountability in an atmosphere like that?
Yeah.
Now, one thing I think that's important to point out is, let's say over here, we have the mainstream media and the official story, and their job really is to downgrade anything like higher consciousness or subjects like UFOs, for example. And then we have groups and marketing companies and corporations in the field, sometimes trying to exploit it. And then we have someone like you who's practicing this sovereign spirituality, and you're walking right down the middle in between these two powerful forces on either side. That's a fascinating dynamic, and that's really where we are.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you can see it, everywhere. And I think that we're not really going to get the New Age, or what we understand as the New Age, which is really just a bunch of different concepts. We're not going to see that come forward and sovereign spirituality come forward until we look at exactly what you're talking about, until we look at it and we can understand what's going on. We have to be honest. We have to pull back the curtain and look at it before we can even get into an integrated state.
Right. It's an excellent point because, for example, someone could say, I want proof of ETs or I want disclosure. But if they're not developing in their own lives, you know, if they're not ready, it wouldn't necessarily have any value.
No. And this is the thing, is that this, especially with ETs and disclosure, this is a personal experience. There's disclosure is so much more than the government revealing that UFOs exist or any technology that's associated with them. This is revealing our true history. This is revealing our true nature. And it completely merges with spirituality. It merges with the New Age, whether we like it or not, it does.
Right.
And so we have to accept that.
Now, your work is particularly informative in regards to what different ET races there are and what they're all about.
Yeah.
So I find that both compelling and bold. So let's get into some of what you call galactic consciousness here. As I understand it, you feel that someone can attune themselves to this reality and actually communicate with ETs. And you pull no punches. You know, you inform people that it's hard work, but you do inspire confidence that with the right effort, someone could have this experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we can telepathically communicate with each other, and there's a lot of evidence for that, then why can't we telepathically communicate with ETs? Why is it only limited to this planet? And that's something that's always kind of fascinated me. And when we do begin to telepathically communicate with ETs through meditation, and it's just like spirit guides or anything else, we learn so much about ourselves and our history, and we realize that the archetypes that we enjoy with, like, say, Carl Jung or something else also apply to different ET species. And it's really just the same thing, except in an ET form. And the thing that I love about galactic consciousness and ETs is that it really asks us to get more real. Because once you start communicating with, say, an ET consciousness, you really start to realize that, you know, ufology starts merging with the New Age, and a lot of the hidden stuff just can't be hidden anymore because these are actually real beings. It's not just like someone from the other side. These are actually real beings, and that has a profound effect on our consciousness and also the world.
Wow, yeah, and it's having the courage to see a new reality. And that's another signature of your work, which is you speak about antiquated paradigms being deeply embedded in the New Age.
Yeah.
And you suggest that since consciousness is moving all the time and developing, that these more superficial systems, you know, in many cases from decades earlier, can't really suit us now, especially if it's something that's overly marketed. It loses its impact. And in many cases, consciousness has already moved on.
Oh, yeah. It's already, consciousness is always moving on. And we're kind of designed to be in the present moment so we can get whatever downloads are available to us in regards to us moving on and where to be. But there will always be these factions that didn't do their work and are unable to move on. And that will try to hold people back. And they'll usually incorporate a little bit of the new system, a little bit of where things are going, a little bit of what's trendy, you know, using buzzwords and things like that, mm-hmm. to try to maybe hook people in that aren't quite awake. Because they're getting a little bit of what it's about, but they're not truly getting in and encouraging sovereignty. They're not really leaving people ultimately with the fact that we're all students here. There's always some little hook that pulls you back up into some kind of savior paradigm, and we do not need this.
Right. Now let's define this. What kind of place does someone need to be coming from to develop sovereign spirituality? You know, what is it? What's the first step there?
You know what it is? You have to have a fearless nature. I really do feel like you have to have a fearless nature, because the reason why I think people avoid constantly referencing themselves, well, first of all, you have to realize that you can. First of all, I think actually the first thing you have to do is realize that it's possible. I mean, so many people, I think, are not aware, not by any necessarily fault of their own, but they're not aware that they can actually have intuition. They can actually download information directly from source about our history on this planet, about our gifts, about our talents. People don't realize that we can actually do that. So the first thing is to actually begin playing with that idea. Like, what if I could just download all of my own answers myself? If I have a problem, what if I could just intuit the answer? Or what if I could shift my own frequency? We don't actually realize that we can actually do that. So the first step is that. And then after that, you have to have a fearless heart in exploring it and be really, really, really honest with yourself about where your ego is creeping in and saying, this is easier, or this isn't that way, or you have to run with the herd. So you got to be honest, you got to know it exists, and you got to be fearless, I feel.
Interesting. And fearless is an intriguing concept around this, because if you're fearless, for example, you're not afraid to admit you've been following the wrong system or going down the wrong path, that it's a mistake, you know, to overly identify with a movement. Now, that's pretty fascinating. So when you say that a person can have access to these states of consciousness, first of all, is everyone psychic then in some way?
Everyone. Everyone is psychic. Everybody has the psychic glands. Everybody has the ability. It is a human ability. Where it gets interesting is that everybody has different abilities. Everybody has unique abilities. And I mean, I truly, and I see working with my clients, that the more that you allow yourself to remember this, the more we realize that even the intuitive abilities that we know exist right now, say clairaudience, which is clear seeing, and all the other ones, there's even more than that. But only when we all start to click in and understand this will we get to know how many different types of intuition there are. And because it hasn't been probably discussed enough, we don't realize that we may actually be super intuitive, but not in a way that, say, the traditional ones are. Do you know what I mean? So there's so much more to this than I think we realize.
No question. Yeah. Now, how does somebody get to be bold and fearless, you know, when they're approaching something like higher consciousness and spirituality and the deeper awareness?
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend being so easy on yourself and just taking it little by little. I think you get there little by little. And another thing is that the heart, as wishy-washy and woo-woo as we want to make the heart, it is a powerful point of perception that we have.
Yes.
And if we can bring our consciousness in the heart, which is the actual position that we're designed to be in, we're not designed to be here, right? We're designed to be here. And if we can bring our consciousness there, we will not have the same reactions to things that we have in the past. It's only when we're in our mind, we're in the past, we're in the future, we're in anxiety, that we are so aware of fear and reacting from fear. So when you actually hold yourself in the position that we are designed to be in as humans, we will no longer perceive situations with fear. It will be kind of a little quiet hum in the background that we look at and we're like, okay, I'm a little bit afraid right now. But our soul will become so loud and our sense of time will be projecting into the ideal reality that we want. That might be too new age, but it will be such that we don't even experience fear the same way. We experience fear the way we experience fear because we're not in the right position. And part of that fear we're experiencing is actually trying to get us into a place of peace. And once that happens, everything just unfolds.
So, yeah. Wow. It sounds exciting. It sounds exciting. I remember, and this is kind of an interesting angle to come in on this with. It's a few years ago, everyone was into this idea of the secret and basically the instructions. And it's a big marketing campaign, large scale, but a lot of people got sucked into it. And even reasonably intelligent people who knew things about that, so not even like the regular public who was just catching on. And, you know, they Oprah-fied the whole thing and they came up with this. And
you're getting a car. Yeah.
Right. Visualize yourself in your brand new home, covered in jewels, and you're all set. And everybody buys the book. Now, it's fascinating because we know, and I think in your work, you recommend visualization. But at the same time, there was kind of a too simple a spirituality attached to this. And there was a lot afterwards of people being let down and say, well, the secret didn't work for me, you know, and everybody wanting this antidote. But what is this too simple, too kind of commercial a spirituality that's invading here? And what's the problem with that?
Well, the problem with that is that it's not real. The whole visualization thing, in my opinion, it should be taken one step further, which is that we visualize not because that's actually going to be what we are going to experience, because we can't actually visualize how amazing we are, essentially, or how amazing are we. Don't even have the capacity sometimes to visualize that.
Yeah.
The point of visualization is actually to evoke a feeling, evoke a certain state of being within us, and layers of emotion, essentially, usually gratitude. And why that's important is because our future is forged in the emotions that we feel. And a lot of us cannot actually feel emotions unless we have some kind of visualization attached to it, because we're kind of obsessed with the external world. And we can see that with our kind of material, our materialism here. So I think the secret was kind of a bit of a reverse engineering, where we visualized to create a certain state of being so that we could then have the perception that allows us to change our life. Because if you're in a low emotional state, if you are in the lower emotions, if you're depressed, if you're angry, you're not afforded the perception to actually see opportunities to get you out of where you are. And you're not actually hooking up with real timelines that you can, that can change your life. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And the timelines thing is very interesting. You know, you're going deeper here, really, than the secret ever went. That's for sure. And the way you describe timelines is unique, I feel, because, you know, I've heard you say that someone would have to accept the reality of the timeline in order to understand what happened there. For example, information that comes up about lost cultures, Atlantis, Lemuria. And some people feel that connection. But for an average person, you know, it's dismissed as a fable. My understanding of what you have to say about this is that someone would have to allow for that kind of history in order to appreciate and understand the timeline that they were involved with there and their experiences there. So some academic theory about this can't really help you. It has to be something personal.
Absolutely. We are creating our reality as we go. And especially with lost civilizations, it has to reach some kind of a consensus. First within yourself, which is usually, like, say we're doing Atlantis, you would need to understand what that was to you. You'd need to integrate your piece of the puzzle. And when you do that, you'll get the understandings about Atlantis. And that will change the timeline in the future. And it will also go into the collective consciousness. And other people will have access to your piece of the puzzle from Atlantis. It will also allow them to access theirs. And so a certain momentum can be created. And we can remember certain things in that way. Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, it's about acknowledging and awakening this latent memory. Of course, a lot of what we know about a place like Atlantis comes from people remembering past lives there. But with timelines, you're not just remembering a physical life here on Earth, you're also engaging other realities. And that brings us around to your work on the ET question, which has some of that fearless and bold quality that you mentioned earlier in relation to this sovereign spirituality. You seem to have a great ease with the whole subject of ET consciousness. You know, you call it galactic consciousness, and you integrate it seamlessly into these different aspects of spirituality you talk about. So I guess my question here is, how did you come to the conclusion that ETs actually exist?
Oh, I think over time, and I really was not into aliens. That was for Star Trek, and that was for the sci-fi people that LARP, and that was my idea of what it was.
Wow.
But I had my own experience. I actually was in meditation and I started communicating with one. And that's life-changing, and it was life-changing. I tried to ignore it, and I was like, why can't I have a normal spirit guide? Like, why can't I have a Native American chief or a monk like everybody else? Why do I have to have this one? But then I just started, the more that I listened to it, the more that my life changed positively. And then I started talking, and the more people would write me and say, I've had that exact experience. And when you have people writing you out of nowhere, describing these experiences, and I'm reading all these things, and people are writing me that don't know each other, that have seen the same being, like down to weird details, like certain emblems on the outfit or certain things going on. And I was like, this is real.
Yeah.
This is a whole area that is, there's something going on here. And so I just became really fascinated. And when your experience goes beyond you and you start getting these other people writing you and telling you things that are like that, there's no going back.
So. Yeah, I can appreciate that. Well, it's transformative. And I like that you had these deep insights into the different types of aliens. You know, you said on the record that you've had communication with Pleiadians. I definitely find this group fascinating. Everyone from Barbara Marciniak to Billy Meyer and others have talked about this type. And even all the way back to the 50s, we have these stories of these beautiful, ethereal, kind of wispy messengers. There does seem to be a kind of collective idea of these human cousins. Sometimes, you know, we call them Nordics in a lot of the UFO literature, and they have this perfect look to them. You know, the Pleiadians seem to embody this ideal, in a sense. How much of that is true in your experience and in your research?
Yeah, there are so many different types of ETs. It's really Pandora's box, and we like to simplify it and do that. But, there's a lot of different types of ETs. And ETs have been merging with each other, and you've got beings that kind of look Pleiadian, but that have merged with other types of beings, and it's so mixed. It really, really is, and that's what I've come to realize. But with the Nordics, I've noticed that there's sort of like positive Nordics and negative Nordics, and some that are really... There was one story about Nordics that was crazy. Someone had like a hair, and they analyzed it, and it was Mongolian.
Oh.
There is something, I can't remember what documentary it was from, but a guy had a sexual encounter with a Nordic, because apparently these Nordics go around and do that with people. And he had a hair, and they took the hair and they had it analyzed, and it was actually Mongolian.
I'll have to send you the hair.
But there's some that seem to be okay, and there's some that seem to have a bit of a negative agenda. They're both real, in my opinion. ETs can have a lower state of consciousness. They can have a higher state of consciousness.
I see.
So, but the Nordics are real. Pleiadians are real. And you really have to tap into your own heart and your own self to get the nuances.
Would you say they've had a relationship with us? You know, if we went back to something like ancient Egypt, everybody goes back to Anunnaki and Sumeria. I'll spare you that question. But, you know, Egypt beyond Atlantis, I've heard some things where the Pleiadians were involved with us in Atlantis and saw us fall technologically and have been trying to kind of work with us character-wise to build our character. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, the Pleiadians are meddlers. They were meddlers. I have to say, that's a Pleiadian thing. I agree with what you said about Atlantis, also involved in Lemuria. They've been involved in a lot of different things here. Atlantis has also had a lot of influences from other ET beings as well, and there were definitely warring factions on that side that are still kind of warring today. It's kind of like a microcosm. But the Pleiadians, I think the one thing to say is I think the Pleiadians got a little bit too involved, because the thing about Pleiadians is they tend to wear their heart on their sleeve. And for people who are not into this, they're just going to be like, but they tend to be very loving. They tend to be very mothering, kind of almost feminine. And they did get a little bit too involved in our civilizations. They really did start to almost be like that overly mothering figure.
Right.
What ends up happening is it creates karma for that race of beings. And they get more and more karmically intertwined to figure out why they are the way they are. And so we are in this kind of dance with the Pleiades. And when I say this, I mean Pleiadians from different levels of time. So Pleiadians have been interacting with Earth for quite a while. So you have certain people interacting with Pleiadians that are sort of doing some weird things. Well, that could be a lower consciousness. Not all Pleiadians, you know, there's very evolved Pleiadians. It depends on where your energy is to access that spectrum, but they have been interacting with us for a very long time, and a lot of people have that DNA.
Huh.
And some more than others.
Well, no question. I think there's a reason they're so embedded in the collective unconscious. You know, whether that's this kind of a legendary archetype or in personal experiences for people who have that interaction. Now, I don't think anyone would be too surprised to find out that they have a major influence on you.
Yeah, that was the first guy that came to me was Pleiadian. That was the first guide. And I worked with that guide, that being, for a long time. It was actually myself in a different timeline. It was myself in a different life. And in fact, all my guides are just different aspects of myself. That's how Wholesome, I think, are a little farther away, but that's how I see it. Yeah, I have that influence for sure. Some other people do too.
This is so fascinating. And let's take a look at it from this perspective. You know, there are nuts and bolts type people out there who would say, if you know your astronomy, then you know that the Pleiades can't support life or something along this line. Now, how do you respond to that?
Yeah.
You know, here you are talking on a totally different level. But we hear things like, well, aliens could never come here because the energy required exceeds what we understand in science. So they're locked into this early 21st century paradigm of what can happen, which is totally materialistic. But how do you respond to it?
I say, good question. I say, good. I would recognize that. And I think that's important to say, because it leads us into something else. It leads us into the fact that maybe we have to let go of time. And maybe we have to let go of where we are right now and who we think we are right now, and go a little bit further. And with the Pleiades, it's a different density and it's a different time compared to us. So when you really get into the extraterrestrial consciousness thing, time doesn't exist the way that it does. They're popping in and out of time from a different density. So we can't think of our connection with them like we would in a materialistic way. It'll stop you, actually. If you want to connect with extraterrestrial beings and you get too materialistic, it will completely stop you there. There'll be a membrane there that you won't be able to get past, because you have to switch your focus to the nature of the soul first. And the technology that they use is merged with consciousness. You start getting into any extraterrestrial race and you start getting ships that are controlled by consciousness. Before that, it's kind of crystalline energy, but a lot of the ships are actually controlled by consciousness. There comes a point with ufology and with spirituality where they have to merge to understand who these beings are and even what the technology is. A lot of the questions around technology, the answer is consciousness. The answer is spirituality. A lot of the ships at a certain level are also organic. They're just organic. They're just light. And that's how we travel around. So you really can't be, you can't be materialistic about it. If you do, you will stop yourself from experiencing anything.
Right. It's almost as if you're working with strictly physical ideas about the phenomena, and that's what scientific materialism would like you to do, it narrows your perceptions, and it's easy to lose that connection to a higher level. Now, when we come back, I'll ask you more about these ET types and more about what they're doing here. Final round of part one coming up with Gigi Young. Wow, serious mind-bending stuff here, Gigi. I'm Dark Journalist. Stay with us.
Dark Journalist. Go for truth in 2017. The deepest questions, the biggest secrets, the darkest mysteries. Dark Journalist. Go for truth. With top guests like Graham Hancock.
Graham, how do we as a society escape the grip of the deep state in the 21st century?
Rather than spending trillions of dollars every year on building up our armies and our weapons of mass destruction and creating a climate of hatred and fear and suspicion, we should be uniting as a human race.
Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, what is the issue that's holding us back and destroying prosperity?
We have a system which has got a negative return on investment. It's killing human productivity, and where it's going is inhuman.
Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, you've been fighting against secrecy your whole life. How are we doing in this battle?
There is a kind of energy and synergy that you and I have because we are both trying so hard in so many facets to get to the bottom of what is the truth.
Dark Journalist. Go for truth. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special fall discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll receive exclusive member benefits, including access to the complete high-quality audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, and subscriber-only content, including bonus show material. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist. This is the year. Now is the time.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Join us now and go for truth.
And we are back. This is Dark Journalist, and I'm speaking with intuitive coach Gigi Young. Now, Gigi's been ringing a lot of bells lately in independent circles with her sovereign spirituality. And as we can see from this interview, she's got an excellent grasp of the ET and higher consciousness questions that are truly a deep mystery. Now, I think her work is remarkably eclectic. There's something fresh in her style, so I know we'll be seeing a lot more of her. Now, Gigi, we just left off speaking about alien types, and you were describing characteristics around what we term Pleiadians. The other group I think we should touch on here are these mantis beings that play an unusual role in many encounters as a kind of wisdom keeper. Now, I'm going to take us way back to 1945 in San Antonio, New Mexico, and there are two boys that came across a crashed vehicle, and as they got closer, they started to see these beings in the craft who were mantis-like in appearance. And one of the boys caught the eye of one of these beings, and the boy said he felt a rush of images go through his mind at incredible speed, but also this deep river of emotion, as if they had just lost some crew members in this crash. Now, we don't usually associate strong emotions with ETs. However, it is a kind of signature with this mantis type. Now, I want to ask you about this type, but first, what happens when something from a different level or dimension actually crashes here physically in this density?
Yeah, well, they would be stepping down density. That's what they would be doing. And they might even be on a different timeline than some of their ancestors. Mm-hmm. So when we're interacting with ETs, we kind of immediately want to put them into the same category, but there's a difference between acting with extraterrestrial beings when they are more physical to when they're actually ascended into a higher level of consciousness. And so I think that when they're more physicalized, they're sort of maybe in a little bit of a different timeline. I don't know, is that making sense?
Yeah.
And then with mantis beings, what I know about them is they tend to be space holders, and they tend to actually be very, very advanced, and they actually do change their forms as well. They can, a lot of the mantis energy can also be seen as light bodies and light beings.
Okay.
One of the things about mantis beings is that you were saying that, you know, they really impress this energy upon you, is that they're actually really good at telepathy, and they're really, really good at that. And they're one of the they're one of the better ones with actually giving downloads and actually impressing emotions upon people. But I actually thought it's really rare. What you said was really rare. I have to say that to have these beings in a crash is pretty rare. It's usually different kinds.
Yes, that's definitely true.
That's what
it's rare.
That's what I've noticed. I'm actually at a loss of words that they did crash, because my understanding of them, and I hope that it evolves, and I hope that I can learn more about them. I haven't spent too much time. My understanding is that they're history holders and they're observers, and they hold space for us. And I did a reading for a client who had a really strong connection to Atlantis, and she had a really strong connection to mantis beings. And what came forward was that there were like three mantis beings that were associated with Atlantis, and they were holding all the energy for basically Atlantis to happen.
Huh.
So they seem to have, wow. And then one ended up dying. And so there seems to be this thing where they come in and out of our reality through stargates at certain times. And I think that the timing is usually significant, but mm-hmm. they're usually everything that I know is that they're very advanced, but I have heard accounts of them being negative, and I don't really know where to place those because I just haven't had that in my experience. Was the crash like a negative experience for them, or was that like a positive?
Well, what stands out really is that the boys wanted to help the beings, and then they caught this wave of melancholy and were just overwhelmed. So I'd say it was more upsetting than negative. Interesting enough, the story winds out with them going and getting their parents, and later the next day they come back, and the craft is still there. It's damaged. It has a hole in it. But none of the beings are there. They're gone. So then the parents get the military who would close off the area and take the craft away. And when these men recounted the story, and each story complemented the other over 70 years or so, it was very believable. And that's Rene Baca and Jose Padilla. It's an incredible story if anyone wants to look into it. What always caught my attention was the boys' reaction to the mantis beings and the sadness that they were projecting. They described it as feeling like being at a funeral. So it's an incredible case for sure that's hard to forget. But again, when researchers like Linda Moulton Howe discuss these mantis beings, it lines up very closely with what you were saying about them holding the space of Atlantis, for example, the memory. So they're like wisdom keepers as an archetype.
I know, I realize that may be a little obscure for your audience, but like it for, or not your audience, but some people, but.
Sure. Well, they're going to catch the wave of what you're saying, right? They are like great keepers of true history.
But they, yeah, because like, I think the most thing, forget the Atlantis statement if you're uncomfortable with it. The most important thing is that they have this ability to impress an energy, right? Like they have the feeling, it's like, imagine if there's a couple different mantis beings around a city. If they could affect that boy or the individual with the feeling of a funeral, imagine how they could change the tides if there was three of them over a city. And could they be doing work to help stabilize or neutralize energy close? And I mean, and I don't mean in a sinister way. I mean in a way where when we get very advanced in our consciousness, we try to be as close to the cosmic rhythm as possible. And we want to act directly with the seasons. We don't want to go against it. We don't want to do negative things. We want to be basically an extension of source, an extension of that. And so they stand up mitigating, and you end up trying to do this work. And that's always kind of where I've seen them come from. If they crashed, when things like that happen, I wonder if it was just to get the word out about something, to get in people's consciousness. and to get people talking about them, because a lot of even advanced ETs will kind of come down here and crashes, or they'll come up to people because they have to break into our reality. And if they can break into one person's reality as a physical being, then they can break into the collective. And I think that there are certain times where ETs will try to break into the collective by crashing here and having conversations with us, and we get to feel their energy in 3D. And I think that that's important.
Wow, right. We'd never get the opportunity to experience them otherwise. Now, one of the more interesting lines of research that's come out suggests that some of these ET groups will actually live among human communities. And we know there's a great deal of hybrid-related research by people like Dr. David Jacobs, for example. And I'm aware of an obscure line of research that traces ET interaction through the centuries through groups like blacksmiths, for example.
Is that like a Freemasonic thing?
You're right. There's all of these stories about the Masons, you know, keeping these beings from crash retrievals in Washington, and Truman, who was a Mason himself, overseeing that process. It is a great mystery, and the blacksmith part is like, you know, that character working with metals in history.
Is that a metaphor for alchemy?
It could be, because that whole tradition comes right out of the mystery schools.
Turning these metals into gold.
Well, now we start to wonder about these traditions.
I have never heard that.
I know, it's really intriguing. And we start to realize that we're getting these pieces that are so unusual, and it's adding up to a very mysterious picture.
I love those pieces.
Yeah.
Because everybody has their own remembrance of history. And we all have these little weird things, like that woman who was involved with mantis beings and Atlantis.
Yes.
She was a channel for mantis beings. That's what she was. And we'll find different channels of different beings on Earth today, actually, that directly bring the consciousness down. But yeah, you'll have these weird, obscure things like that, where they were, for whatever reason, they're like, I'm going to be blacksmiths, and they were blacksmiths for a while. Or at least they incarnated into maybe humans that took that, because it was just the perfect way to get something across in that society.
Right, right. And I think it's compelling just looking at the influence that they have. Now, one thing here about Atlantis, since we're talking about it, you know, is Atlantis really important for us to remember because it was such a spiritual high point? Is that the real idea? You know, what's drawing us in there?
It is. It's important because of the magnitude, I think, that it had, because there's a bunch of little small civilizations that were smaller that we don't even really mention as much. Uh-huh. I think the magnitude of Atlantis and how many different civilizations were involved, what they were trying to do, how much diversity they were trying to integrate was a big deal. So it made it very powerful. It's also a little bit more recent than some of the other civilizations. And also we have to remember that what we often forget with Atlantis is that it was also going on in the higher realms. Uh-huh. So Atlantis was happening in 3D, it was happening in 4D, and it was a phenomenon that was happening in the higher level. And we have so much energy going on, it makes a huge imprint on us. And we are going through the throes of Atlantis now. Again, and that's why I think that it's also important, is because we just so happen to be on the same journey as that.
Wow, Gigi, amazing information. And in part two, we'll go deeper into Atlantis and what consciousness was vouchsafed there between the ET groups and the initiates of those ancient times. And we're going to go into the next level of your sovereign spirituality, which goes pretty deep because you're talking about someone arriving at a true vision of themselves. Really refreshing and fascinating work. I think sometimes when we get into the more esoteric, elusive subjects like psychic experience or ET encounters, it's more powerful when done by someone with a direct connection. Now, people can find you at ggyoung.com or on YouTube with your channel. I highly recommend people watch those videos because there's a wealth of information there. So thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Definitely. You're doing amazing things.
You too.
Thank you. Thank you for joining me for this fascinating episode with intuitive coach Gigi Young on UFOs, galactic consciousness, and sovereign spirituality. You can find more special reports, deep interviews, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Sign up for our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows.